Welcome to Sandwell News, helping local blind and vision impaired people catch up with the news for the last 7 days. This is the final edition available on the 20th of December, available on the internet as a podcast and to postal listeners.
And a Merry Christmas to you all from everyone at Sandwell News.
In the few days before Christmas, sunrise will be at 8:15, while sunset will be at 5 to 4. It will be quite cold at around 3 degrees Celsius, and you can expect rain.
We have a packed edition for you in the run-up to Christmas, before our much-needed break, before we come back in the new year. More about that later on.
Some headlines from this week's Express and Star. Wednesday's news: the trend of costly blazes at industrial sites. Plan to turn former Conservative club into home is backed. Thursday's news: could dark chocolate be the secret to longer life? Friday's news: shortage of delivery drivers sparks Christmas warning. Eton-backed Dudley Academy gets go-ahead from government. West Bromwich Neuro Hospital recognised for excellence. Saturday's news: Blackheath pub save Christmas after returning life-size Santa to a local hospital. Metropolitan Hospital put on flu crisis alert. Gardening advice: making Christmas bulbs last longer. Monday's news: Nationwide fined £45 million after COVID-related fraud. Tuesday's news: family-run pork scratchings firm battles to rebuild after devastating fire. Blind footballer celebrates Football Hall of Fame honour.
All those stories and more, of course, coming up courtesy of Express and Star Publications. And we'll be including one or two TNF soundings items we haven't had time to use up until now. And there'll be one or two stories from the council and the latest West Bromwich Albion report, which is better this week. They won last Friday or Saturday, I think it was. On to the first day's news then.
This is James Brodie bringing to you stories from the Express and Star dated the 10th of December. Worrying and costly trend of blazes at industrial sites. Black Country hit by a series of fires across business units and scrapyards in 2025. This story is brought to you by Adam Smith. Two giant industrial fires have highlighted the regularity and cost of industrial fires in the Black Country. Last Thursday night, a fireworks storage unit on Pleck Road, Walsall, opposite the Manor Hospital, saw 11 fire engines, nearly 60 firefighters, two brigade response vehicles and hydraulic aerial ladder platform dispatched by West Midlands Fire Service. Roads were closed and crews remained on site the following day, dampening down what hours before was a raging inferno. Then, just 24 hours later, 100 tonnes of scrap metal was set ablaze accidentally in Spring Road Industrial Estate, Bilston, forming another major response from West Midlands Fire Service with 6 appliances and 30 firefighters on the scene. Nearby residents were warned to keep their windows closed due to dangerous fumes, and again, there were crews still on site the following day. This year has followed the trend of industrial fires being the single biggest cause of fire incidents in the Black Country. Compared to other regions in the country, there is a higher concentration of recycling companies, scrapyards and metal storage companies. This year started with a major scrapyard blaze in West Bromwich, with firefighters tackling a fire on Phoenix Road. Local residents, John Staines, videoed the firefighters putting their lives on the line trying to extinguish the inferno. In the same month, the consequences of scrapyard fires were on show when a fire took hold around 2 p.m. in the shredder of a scrap facility on Raybone Road in Smethwick. West Midlands Fire Service used drones as part of this operation. 2 years earlier, another scrapyard fire caused the closure of the Black Country route, one of the busiest roads in the region. More than 40 firefighters were needed to beat the blaze at Enelblick Road, a scrap resale business in George Henry Road, Tipton. That fire caused the closure of the Great Western Way, George Henry Road and the Black Country route, costing the town's economy an astronomical amount of money. In March, a fire at a Briley Hill scrapyard could be seen for miles around. This time, West Midlands Fire Service confirmed that the fire was the result of arson, where the majority of industrial fires were deemed accidental. A West Midlands Fire Service representative said that it was believed to have been started deliberately. However, 9 months later, nobody has been prosecuted. As summer began, the scrapyard fires kept on coming just as the fire brigade needed all of its resources to be on guard to contain wildfires around the region. Firefighters were called to the Brick Kiln Street, Briley Hill, shortly before 9:30 a.m. on June 16th. This time the fire was dealt with within half an hour. In July, the centre of Wolverhampton was covered in thick black smoke as a fire took hold in an abandoned car park behind the old BT's building. However, at the other end of the scale in August, around 30 firefighters fought the flames and smoke at the height of the incident at the Alexander Brothers Metal Recycling Plant in Springvale Road Street off St Anne's Road, Willenhall, around 6:25 p.m. on August the 16th. In October the 25th, tons of scrap metal ignited in Winston Green, Birmingham, and in November, bonfires lit by residents for Guy Fawkes Night heaped on the pressure on services within Staffordshire Fire and Rescue, revealing that they were called out to 10 fires which got out of control. The cost of industrial fires across the country to the taxpayer is believed to be in the billions. Government's research estimated that each industrial fire response can cost an average of £130,000. After year-on-year increases in certain types of fires, the government produces a report concerning the cost of fires in England showing industrial fires dwarf blazes in homes. Published in July 2023, the economic and social cost of fire was the first comprehensive attempt by the Home Office to estimate the economic and social cost of fire in England. As the figures were based on 5 years ago, inflation will have increased the cost. Industrial fires cost the taxpayer £130,000 per call, compared to £35,000 for dwelling fires. As well as financial cost, there is the environmental impact of industrial fires. The Home Office has pointed to the emissions created by extinguishing fires. The report said that the release of hydrofluorocarbon gas was fixed fire suppression systems in commercial buildings. This gas is generally used because it is a method of extinguishing fires without damaging electronic equipment. The total volume of emissions from firefighting is approximately 0.31 million tonnes of carbon dioxide, the equivalent MTCOTE, per year. As the data covers the whole of the UK and only England is in the scope of this report, the total is multiplied by 84% to get an updated estimate of 0.26 MTCO2E. Plan to turn a 100-year Conservative Club into children's home backed. A move to convert the historic Smethwick Conservative Club into a home for vulnerable children has been approved by council planners. The planning application to Sandwell Council asked for permission to convert the club, which has stood in Smethwick High Street for more than 100 years, into a residential home for up to 6 children. West Midlands Police raised concerns about the plan, saying that it was located in a high crime area and the application had not included any management or security plans. The Forces Design Out Crime Officers said that the management and security plan was essential, as police spent a lot of time dealing with missing children, and if they're not local and are vulnerable and have issues such as the application, this makes the children even more vulnerable as they're in an area that they do not know. A statement included with the application said that the Empire House Children's Home is seeking the necessary approval to care for 6 vulnerable children at the aforementioned address. The premises has been previously used as a members' social club, with members visiting the club from as early as 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. 7 days a week. The site is a detached building which stands alone at the end of a residential cul-de-sac, surrounded by a beautiful wraparound, including garden, ensuring safety and privacy for its residents. The site also boasts 4 private parking spaces, with another 14 spaces in a public car park immediately facing the premises. Despite approving the plans in principle, the councillor's highways department said that public car parks and on-street spaces should not be included in the plans, and the children's home would have no control over them. Firm fined £24,000 after a man's hand crushed in machinery. Inspectors said that the incident involving unguarded machine was entirely preventable. This story is brought to you by Daniel Walton. A Black Country-based metal polishing company has been fined more than £24,000 after an employee's hand was crushed in a machine. FMP West Midlands Limited in Albury were fined following a Health and Safety Executive, that's HSE, investigation after an employer's hand was crushed when it became entangled in an unguarded polishing tube, resulting in the amputation of one finger and the severe crushing of two others. Nathan Watkins was working for the company on July 8, 2024, when he was loading a tube polishing machine. The machine was found to have had faulty tubes, which required Mr. Watkins to lean over and straighten the metal tubes. As he did so, his left hand became entangled in the machine's unguarded cogs and chains. Mr. Watkins' left ring finger was severed in the first knuckle. His middle finger was crushed, requiring an operation to have a metal rod inserted, and his index finger was crushed, requiring multiple surgeries. The 35-year-old has undergone 8 surgeries and requires further operations. He's also been unable to return to work following the incident. Mr. Watkins said, "I have gained some strength back in my hand, but it is very tender and painful." The HSE investigation found that FMP West Midlands Limited had failed to prevent access to dangerous parts of the machinery, mainly the rotating cogs and the chains in the rollers. The firm admitted breaching Regulation 11(10) of the Provision of Use of Work Equipment Regulations 1998 and was fined £24,000 and told to pay £2,000 victim surcharge and £4,073.10 in costs at Birmingham Magistrate Court on Fridays. HSE Inspector Talia Phelan said that the incident was entirely preventable and there are clear guidelines on machinery guarding to prevent the access of dangerous parts. Maker's Marker launched at hospital. A market aiming to champion local businesses from the Birmingham Black Country area is now open at the region's newest hospital. The Midland Met Maker's Market was officially launched on December 2nd and will showcase a range of local artists, bakers, designers and artisan food producers and other small businesses. The indoor market can be found in the Winter Garden on level 5 of the Midlands Metropolitan University Hospital, giving traders the opportunity to connect with staff, patients and visitors. Stalls will open over the festive season, giving shoppers the chance to look for Christmas gifts for their loved ones. The items available to buy include pet accessories, clothing, cakes, handmade gifts and fresh produce. 48-year-old Paula Adkins of Smethwick runs the Something Random Gifts and Designs. Speaking at a stall, she said, "I think that the market is a really good idea and it's a lovely space we're in. It's nice to give patients and their families something to do whilst they're in hospital. We've spoken to a lot of them and to staff and the feedback has been really positive." The Makers Market aims to celebrate and support businesses from the local community as part of the commitments from Sandwell and West Birmingham's NHS Trust who run the hospital. Top trust role for woman with 30 years experience in the health sector. A woman who has spent 30 years working in health and social care roles has been appointed as the new boss of the Black Country Healthcare NHS Foundation Trust. Paula Lloyd Knight becomes the organisation's chief operating officer, that's the COO, after spending 3.5 years as the deputy. Her previous roles before working for the trust included associate director of acute and urgent care services at Birmingham and Solihull Mental Health, NHS Foundation Trust, as well as the other national and regional roles within health and social care. The appointment follows the retirement of the former COO, Chris Massicane, and a competitive national recruitment process with the chief executive Marcia Foster, who said that there was a high level of outstanding applications. She said, "I'm delighted to welcome Paula as our new CEO after the retirement of our colleague Chris and would like to thank him for his hard work and incredible service to the trust. With Paula's experience both inside and outside the NHS, most recently as our deputy CEO, she brings an incredible insight into the role and I look forward to continuing to work with her to deliver the best possible services in our communities across the Black Country." Ms. Lloyd Knight said that, "I'm honoured to have been appointed COO and to be continuing my work at the Trust, ensuring that our services continue to meet the needs of our Black Country communities, and I look forward to building on the progress that we've made."
This is Alison, reading a selection of articles from the Express and Star dated Thursday, the 11th of December. Award launched to recognise courage of children with cancer throughout region. An award scheme recognising the courage of children and young people diagnosed with cancer has launched in the Black Country in Staffordshire. Around 610 children in the Midlands region are diagnosed with the disease every year. Nominations for the Cancer Research UK for Children and Young People Star Awards are now open, and families are being called on to nominate young cancer patients and survivors for the honour in the run-up to Christmas. The Star Awards are open to all under 18s who live in the UK and have been treated for the disease within the past 5 years. There is no judging panel because Cancer Research UK for Children and Young People believes every child diagnosed with cancer deserves special recognition. Everyone nominated receives a trophy, £50 TK Maxx gift card, T-shirt, and a certificate signed by a host of famous faces, including children's poet and author Joseph Coelho, US singer, dancer, and reality TV star Jojo Siwa, pop icon Pixie Lott, TV personality Dr. Ranj, and children's TV favourite Mr. Maker. Their siblings also receive a special certificate. Calling for more nominations across the region, Jojo Siwa said, "The Star Awards are a brilliant way to recognise the courage of children who are diagnosed with cancer. They have to go through so much, and the Star Awards are a great scheme for them and their families to show them that we all think they are so brave." Cancer in children and young people is different to cancer in adults, from the types of cancer that affect this age group to the long-term effects of treatment, such as hearing loss and infertility. It needs a different and dedicated approach. That's why Cancer Research UK, the biggest charitable funder of research into children's and young people's cancers in the UK, is supporting vital work to develop more effective and less toxic treatments. Right now, researchers and doctors in Birmingham are investigating how to improve survival in children and young people with newly diagnosed acute lymphoid leukemia, ALL. The trial, called ALL Together 1, also aims to reduce long-term side effects caused by tailoring treatments to patients based on how likely their cancer is to come back. Birmingham is home to a Cancer Research UK Clinical Trials Unit, which hosts the only dedicated clinical trial unit for children's cancers of its kind in the UK. Cancer Research UK spokesperson for the West Midlands, Paula Young, said, "We're driving forward progress so more children and young people can live longer, better lives, free from the fear of cancer. A cancer diagnosis is heartbreaking at any age, but it can be particularly devastating for youngsters, especially when many may experience lifelong side effects from their treatment." To nominate a star, visit cruk.org/star awards. Could dark chocolate be the key to enjoying a longer life? Chemical found in treat is linked to theobromine, which can slow down ageing. A chemical found in dark chocolate could help slow down ageing, researchers suggest. The study looked at levels of theobromine, a compound found in cacao plants, in the blood, and compared them with markers of biological ageing, which indicates how old the body is in terms of health and function, rather than years lived. While experts would not advise people to eat more chocolate, they said the findings could help unlock the everyday foods that hold clues to healthier, longer lives. Theobromine is a relatively unexplored dietary phytonutrient that has been linked to health benefits and extended lifespan, researchers said. However, there has been limited studies on its effect on humans. The analysis, carried out by experts at King's College London, included 509 people in the Twins UK cohort and 1,160 people from the CORA study in Germany. Researchers said they found a significant association between circulating levels of theobromine in the blood and slower biological ageing. Dr. Rami Saad of King's College London, who is also a researcher at University College London, added, "This is a very exciting finding, and the next important questions are what is behind this association and how can we explore the interactions between dietary metabolites and our epigenome further. This approach could lead us to important discoveries towards ageing and beyond in common and rare diseases." Jordana Bell, professor of epigenomics at King's College London, said, "Our study finds links between a key component of dark chocolate and staying younger for longer. While we're not saying that people should eat more dark chocolate, this research can help us understand how everyday foods may hold clues to healthier, longer lives. Show of solidarity as violence towards women highlighted. A walk to reclaim the night as part of a campaign against violence towards women and girls has been held. More than 100 people took part in the walk through Albury Town Centre on Monday as part of 16 days of action aimed at tackling domestic abuse and sexual violence. The show of solidarity follows recent racially aggravated attacks on women in the West Midlands. The event was organised by the Safer Sandwell Partnership, which includes members from the Borough Council, Black Country Women's Aid and West Midlands Police. It follows several other events throughout the borough, which have highlighted issues such as domestic abuse, stalking, online safety and sexual violence, offering support to those affected. Councillors Kerry Carmichael and Suzanne Hartwell, Sandwell Council's leader and deputy respectively, joined the walk alongside fellow members and council staff, as well as other community organisations and unions. Councillor Carmichael said, "It's really important that these issues are highlighted. We need safer streets. We want women to feel safe when they go out. We want them to walk out without fear. We should be progressing, but we're not." Councillor Hartwell said, "A couple of ladies on the walk said it's as if we have gone backwards. But when what has happened tonight is circulated to the community, if we can just reach out to one person and say, we're listening, you're not alone, we stand shoulder to shoulder with you, then it's been worth it." Sarah Ward, Executive Director of Black Country Women's Aid, said, "It's really good to see so many people from the community and organisations and unions all come together, united in this message of wanting safer streets for women and girls." Chief Superintendent Kim Maddell, Sandwell Police Commander, said, "Events like tonight are really important, and it is members of the community coming together, men, women, all different faiths and backgrounds, standing in solidarity against violence against women and girls." Two arrested after early morning smash. Two people were arrested on suspicion of drink driving after a crash in West Bromwich. Police were alerted to an overturned vehicle in Beacon View Road just after 1:20 a.m. yesterday. Two people, a 49-year-old man and 26-year-old woman, were arrested nearby on suspicion of driving while unfit through drink or drugs. They were taken into custody for questioning.
This is Lauren with some stories from the Express and Star from the 12th of December. Delivery driver shortage sparks festive warning. A leading national recruiter with branches in Birmingham and Stafford has warned Christmas presents will go undelivered this year because of a major driver shortage. Lee Gamble, Managing Director of Berry Recruitment, which works across the UK, has warned of a perfect storm of issues, which means there will be fewer Santa's little helpers than the country needs. A combination of older drivers retiring, a poor road network, long hours, poor pay and driving test delays means deliveries will be missed, he said. He is worried with parents relying on delivering companies to receive presents they have ordered. The situation could lead to thousands of upset children. Mr. Gamble said, "This is the worst I have known it since I began in 1998, and many drivers who are recruited have little or no experience, especially if they are from overseas. The problem is not just for the 7.5-ton, Class 1 and 2 drivers, but for the less experienced car and van drivers who deliver to doors. Many older drivers, when they need a medical or have to renew their CPC, Certificate of Professional Competence qualification, are retiring instead or finding less arduous jobs." Eton College backed academy gets go ahead from government. Plans to bring Eton College to Dudley Borough have been approved nearly 4 years after being floated. The plans, first announced in 2022, had been on hold after the Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, announced a review of all free schools in October last year. But last night, Dudley Council confirmed the move is now back on, following an announcement at Westminster. It means that plans for the Eton Star Academy, which will welcome up to 240 pupils per year, can proceed, and the announcement has been warmly welcomed by the leader of Dudley Council. Councillor Patrick Harley said, "This is a great announcement and one that further enhances the quality of higher education for the students of Dudley and the wider Black Country. Whilst it's been a long time coming, I welcome the DfE finally making the decision that adds to the offer for the next generation and further assists in the regeneration of Dudley Town Centre. Eton and Star Academies choosing Dudley is a big vote of confidence in the abilities of Dudley people to deliver. What an opportunity for the next generation of talented kids that would never get the opportunity had Eton and Star not selected Dudley as a prime location." Last year, the authority announced part of a council car park in Stafford Street in Dudley Town Centre would be cleared to allow the college to be built. Plans had been on hold since then and subject to government review. Dudley was set to provide land for the college on Stafford Street, but the scheme was put on hold when Labour took over in Westminster and called for a spending review. Transport police confirm death on railway tracks. A person has died following reports of an incident at a railway station. Emergency services had been called to Dudley Port Station in Tipton yesterday after reports of a casualty on the tracks at around 6:15 a.m. West Midlands Ambulance Service paramedics worked to treat the person, but nothing could be done and they were pronounced dead at the scene. British Transport Police also confirmed the death was not being treated as suspicious. A spokesman for British Transport Police said, "Officers were called to a report of a casualty on the tracks just before 6:15 a.m. near Dudley Port Railway Station. Officers and paramedics attended and sadly a person was pronounced deceased. The incident is not thought to be suspicious and a file will be prepared for the coroner." A spokesperson for West Midlands Ambulance Service said, "We were called at 6:15 a.m. to an incident on Station Drive, Tipton. Upon arrival, we found one patient. Sadly, it was clear that nothing could be done to save the patient, and they were confirmed deceased at the scene. The line between Sandwell and Dudley had been closed for several hours due to the incident, reopening at 8:22 a.m. Hospital is recognised for excellence. A hospital in West Bromwich has been recognised for multiple examples of good practice across its neuroservices in the first report published by the Quality Network for Neuroservices, QN Neuro. Located on Grout Street, Signet Heathers is a 20-bed service providing neuropsychiatric and neurodegenerative rehabilitation for men with mental health difficulties and acquired brain injuries. The Signet Healthcare Service was released in the inaugural report released by the Royal College of Psychiatrists, which highlights the work of participating neuroservices across the UK during QN Neuro's first year in operation. The report showcases innovation, compassionate care and effective multidisciplinary working, all areas where the Signet Healthcare Service was repeatedly acknowledged. Dr. Matt Rowett, Signet Group Consultant Neuropsychiatrist, said, "The QN Neuro standards offer a robust framework for benchmarking performance, strengthening pathways, and embedding a culture of continuous improvement. Being recognised across so many categories reflects the dedication, expertise, and compassionate care delivered by Signet's teams. The report reinforces Signet's commitment to delivering person-centred, recovery-focused care, supporting staff development and strengthening partnerships with families, carers and external services."
Hello, this is Sarbjit reading articles from The Express and Star. Saturday, 13th of December. Pub saves Christmas after returning Santa to his hospital home. The picture of Debbie Wood, who is reunited with Santa. Staff and customers at a Blackheath pub have stepped in to save Christmas for patients at a nearby hospital after returning a much-loved Santa figure. Staff at the hospital were baffled when the life-size Santa Claus, which had become an icon for patients and visitors alike, disappeared overnight on December 4. But the figure turned up the next day when a man ran into the Knight's Quest in High Street, Blackheath, on Saturday morning, asking those inside to look after it. The hospital's ward service officer, Debbie Wood, posted on social media appealing for Santa's return, and landlord of the pub, Ron Hardwick, responded, taking him back on Wednesday. Rob said, "It was strange, to say the least, to see someone come in the pub on a Saturday morning with a large Santa, and I could only wonder how they managed to take it from the hospital. But we agreed to look after it before we got in touch with staff via the social media call, and it could be returned to its rightful owner. He caused quite a stir with the regular customers and is welcome back for a pint any time." Debbie said, "When he went missing, we were heartbroken, but thanks to our wonderful neighbours, he came home to huge applause from patients and staff." Ambulance service staff organise donations. The picture of staff and volunteers from across the trust who responded to the appeal with generosity. By Dan Stacey. Two staff networks from West Midlands Ambulance Service have come together to organise a donation of essential supplies for people in Jamaica after the devastating Hurricane Melissa in October. The One Network and the Women's Network have been working together since the hurricane struck at the end of October to appeal to staff and volunteers at West Midlands Ambulance Service for donations to support affected communities in Jamaica. Staff and volunteers from across the trust responded to their appeal with generosity by donating essential hygiene and comfort items. In just a few weeks, a total of 455 items, such as sanitary towels, nappies, baby milk, toothbrushes, toothpaste, body wash, deodorant, paracetamol, ibuprofen, and plasters were received. On Monday, December 8, the donations were delivered by the One Network co-chairs Keeling Hutton and Mohammed Azim to Beverly Johnson at JLB International Shipping. Beverly will be adding the donations to her company's 8th humanitarian relief container ready for shipping to Food for the Poor, Jamaica charity. Keeling Hutton said, "We would like to thank Beverly at JLB International Shipping for her continued humanitarian work and support in making this possible." Hospital put on flu crisis alert. By Deborah Hardiman, Chief Reporter. The new Midland Metropolitan Hospital has been placed on standby to take an influx of flu patients if others in the region cannot cope with numbers. NHS bosses said a number of measures could be implemented to ease the strain on emergency departments and free up beds as hospitals battle to cope with demand. And one contingency plan being formulated is to open up space at the new Midland Met in Smethwick, which has spare capacity to look after people who fall seriously ill with the new winter virus. University Hospitals Birmingham NHS Foundation Trust this week declared a critical incident after 269 inpatients, including 9 critical, were presented to busy A&E departments. And new figures show all hospitals are seeing a dramatic rise in cases in a week, including at Sandall Hospital and Walsall Manor Hospital. Last week, a third of all West Midlands ambulances were stuck outside hospitals waiting to admit patients at some point as A&E departments in the region struggled to cope. There are now plans to commission services to implement winter plans earlier than normal, including utilising potential capacity at the Midland Metropolitan Hospital. GPs could also be brought in to help and support with demand as people arrive at A&E. Figures show the number of people in hospital in England with flu remains at a record level for this time of year and has jumped by 55% in a week. Professor Meghana Pandit, NHS National Medical Director, warned the unprecedented wave of super flu is leaving the NHS facing a worst case scenario. David Melbourne of NHS Birmingham and Solihull and NHS Black Country Integrated Care Board said flu was yet to peak and there were challenges for hospitals and ambulance services. Making Christmas bulbs last longer. There are a few pictures of a hellebore among bulbs in a Christmas display pot. There is a picture of hyacinth bulbs in a Christmas arrangement and a cream amaryllis. Christmas flowering bulbs add much needed colour and scent to any festive display, whether you're after delicate looking blooms or blousy showstoppers. But if you are considering buying bulbs to add to your Yuletide decor, think carefully about when you buy them and where you put them. If you are buying prepared bulbs which have been forced to bloom early, such as paperwort daffodils and hyacinths at garden centres and supermarkets for Christmas flowers, bulbs which are already in pots should feel hard to touch, says Alex Sayer, Plant Centre Manager at RHS Garden Wisley. If you've brought them early, you can hold back Christmas flowering bulbs by putting them outdoors under cover, say under an open porch, as long as they are protected from any frost, says Sire. Emma Fell, Head of Horticulture at Hillier Garden Centres, offers advice on these festive favourites. Paper white daffodils. Paper white daffodils are ideal for festive indoor cheer. They're easy to grow, bloom quickly, often in as little as 4 weeks, and fill your room with their sweet fragrance. Instead of using free draining compost, you could grow them on pebbles, she suggests. For the pebble method, place bulbs on top of the stones in a shallow container and keep the water level, just touching the bulb's base. Bright indirect light is perfect, and a cool room will help the blooms last longer, she advises. Each flower typically lasts around 3 weeks, and a small tie can help support the taller stems. Paper whites are best enjoyed indoors, as they don't thrive outdoors after flowering. They have a rich scent and also look good planted with other houseplants, such as indoor ferns and small flowering hellebores, such as Verboom Beauty, which will need planting outside after Christmas, as they will only survive outdoors long-term, Sire adds. He says you can plant paper whites out after flowering, but not over winter. Let the leaves die off and then store them somewhere cool, dry and dark until the summer, when you could replant them outside. Hyacinths. While beautifully fragrant hyacinths aren't naturally winter flowering, forced bulbs are specifically grown to bloom around Christmas, making them a popular choice for festive displays and gifts, says Fell. Plant them in a well-draining compost in a cool, bright spot to encourage sturdy stems, keeping the soil lightly moist. Too much water can rot the bulbs. Once shoots appear, give them bright, indirect light and rotate the pot occasionally so the flowers grow straight. After flowering, let the foliage die back naturally. The bulbs can then be planted outdoors, where they usually return the following spring with a slightly more relaxed, natural look. If you buy a hyacinth when the leaves are fully up, you'll have less time with that bulb than you do with the one that has a shorter growth from the top of the bulb, Sire continues. if it's quite warm inside, that will force it as well. So if you don't want them flowering quickly, put them in a cooler corner. Once they start flowering, they will last up to around 2 weeks. If you want to replant them outside, cut the dead flower spike off, let the leaves die back and store them somewhere cool and dry before replanting them under the soil outside in the spring. Hippiastrums, also known as amaryllis. Amaryllis are the ultimate showstoppers for Christmas. With their large, trumpet-shaped flowers in red, white and pink that instantly lift the festive spirit, says Fell. If you are gifted one, pop it in a bright, sunny window and in about 6 weeks you can expect stunning blooms, she suggests. Water sparingly until the flower stem appears, then increase watering as the bud develops. Tall stems may need gentle support and, after flowering, keep the leaves growing through spring and summer to help the bulb recharge for the next year. These bulbs won't survive frost, so they're best enjoyed as long-term indoor plants. Five things we love this week. Number one, students teamed up with an award-winning Scottish photographer to create miniature scenes with tiny figures and props, including cans of iron brew. David Gilliver and pupils at the prestigious Gordonston School in Moray used the artist's macro photography technique to shoot a series of miniature dioramas. They worked with very small figurines and props to create a series of pictures using extreme close-ups. One features a can of Scotland's other national drink, with the ring pull used as a basketball hoop. Another sees the fizzy drink becoming a river for canoeists. The figures are also seen climbing up a cheese grater and teeing off on top of a tennis ball. Number two, new research from Royal Mail has revealed that 4 in 5, that's 83%, UK pet owners include their pet's name when sending Christmas cards. No longer just pining for the Christmas Day walk, pets are joining in more and more of the family Christmas traditions. 3/4, that's 75%, of owners say they are more likely than ever before to include their pet's name in seasonal greetings. Where you live in the UK can make a big difference to how much your pet gets involved in Christmas. Across the UK, 41% of people have sent a festive card to their pet, with London topping the charts. 63% of the capital's pet owners have sent a card to their four-legged companions. Number three, Strictly Come Dancing star Flavia Cercassi Mistry, ITV vet Dr. Scott Miller and actor Annette Badland were special guests at international working animal charity Brooks Christmas service in London this week. Flavia, Scott and Annette gave festive readings at Brooks Carol Concert, hosted at the Royal Military Chapel, or the Guards Chapel, in Westminster. Also in attendance was broadcaster Angela Rippon, with two donkeys, Pixie and Kiska, greeting guests outside the chapel, followed by a performance from the Guards Chapel choir. Dr. Scott Miller said, "It was a real privilege to be part of this beautiful carol service. As a vet, I've seen firsthand how much working animals endure. This Christmas, I hope people will take a moment to reflect on their incredible resilience and help Brooke give them the care and dignity they deserve." Number four, Wolf Alice and Elbow are among the bands who will headline shows at the Royal Albert Hall in aid of Teenage Cancer Trust in 2026, it has been announced. The Cure's Robert Smith, who has curated the London concerts, said every performer in the lineup is either legendary or at the top of their game. The string of benefit concerts will kick off on Monday, March 23, with a performance from Greater Manchester band Elbow, who will be supported by special guests, soul and R&B band MRCY. The concert series also includes a comedy night on Tuesday, March 24, with a lineup that includes Jack D, Macy Adam, Bridget Christie, Andy Hamilton, Dom Jolly, Miles Jupp, Stuart Lee, and Dara O'Brien. The benefit concerts were founded by the Who frontman, Sir Roger Daltrey, aged 81, who remains an honorary patron of the charity. Number 5. Transatlantic Cable Equipment, an arts and crafts garden with gnomes and elves and an exceptionally rare shipwreck, are among the unusual heritage protected in 2025. Government Heritage Agency Historic England has highlighted 19 of the most remarkable buildings and places given new or updated listed status. From a Neolithic burial mound in the Yorkshire Dales to Second World War Dragon's Teeth anti-tank defences in Surrey. Buildings protected include the post-war Reynold Building at the University of Manchester, a Gothic-style private chapel in Herefordshire, and a former Victorian ironmonger's specialising in ice skates, a rare working smock mill in Kent. Draper's Windmill has been upgraded to the higher Grade 2 listing.
Hello, this is Jenny. The following articles are from the Express and Star newspaper, Monday the 15th of December. Crews tackle blaze at industrial unit. Fire crews were called to a blaze at an industrial unit in West Bromwich. Around 30 firefighters were called out to Pike Health Street near Hilltop in West Bromwich on Saturday evening, and people were advised to stay clear of the area. Crews remained there overnight. A spokesperson for West Midlands Police said, "We were called to Pike Health Street shortly after 6:30 p.m. after a fire at an industrial premises. Officers attended to support fire service colleagues." Nationwide fined £44 million after missing COVID fraud red flags. The Building Society had insufficient anti-financial crime systems and controls. An article by Anna Wise, PA Business Reporter. Nationwide Building Society has been fined £44 million by the UK's financial watchdog for failures to handle financial crime risks linked to its customers, including cases of COVID fraud. The Building Society had inadequate anti-financial crime systems and controls between October 2016 and July 2021, the Financial Conduct Authority, the FCA, said. It found Nationwide was aware that some of its personal current account customers were using their accounts for business activity, but did not have the right controls to manage the resulting financial risks. This meant it was unable to spot and manage money laundering risks, and it did not have an accurate assessment of customers who showed a higher risk for financial crime. In one serious case, Nationwide missed opportunities to spot a customer using personal current accounts to receive £27.3 million worth of fraud, COVID furlough payments, the FCA said. The customer received 24 payments over 13 months, with £26 million of this deposited over 8 days. HMRC recovered £26.5 million, but about £800,000 remains unrecovered. A report published on Tuesday found fraud and error linked to COVID-19 support programmes, including furlough and bounce back loans, cost taxpayers almost £11 billion. Most of the shortfall is now beyond recovery, authors of the report by the COVID Counter Fraud Commissioner found. Therese Chambers, Joint Executive Director of Enforcement and Market Oversight at the FCA, said, "Nationwide failed to get a proper grip of the financial crime risks lurking within its customer base. It took too long to address its flawed systems and weak controls, meaning red flags were missed with serious consequences. Building societies and banks have a key role in the fight against financial crime. Firms must remain vigilant. Nationwide's fine was cut from nearly £63 million to £44 million due to it agreeing to resolve the issues identified in the FCA's probe. Pub licence removed over attack involving unlicensed bouncer. An article by Christian Barnett, local Democracy reporter. A pub has been stripped of its licence after a horrifying baton attack involving an unauthorised bouncer. Samwell Council revoked the licence for the Prince of Wales in West Bromwich High Street after the incident involving door and bar staff and patrons in November. The council's licensing committee stripped 69-year-old owner Rajinder Singh, who has run the pub for more than two decades, of his licence. West Midlands Police said one of the bouncers involved in the violent disorder did not hold a valid licence, and two of its bar staff did not have the right to work in the UK. Door staff had used excessive force and physically assaulted customers using an offensive weapon on November the 19th, according to police. The force said a police-style baton was passed to bouncers by bar staff and that it was used in view of Mr. Singh, who did not call 999 for a considerable time after. CCTV footage of the alleged attack was shown in private but was described as horrific and horrifying by both police and committee member Councillor Richard Jeffcoat, who said, "My concern is he a fit and proper person to run a pub now? Because you will agree the CCTV was horrific." The pub had its licence suspended on November the 19th ahead of a full review on Thursday. West Midlands Police, which called for the pub's licence to be revoked, said the violent disorder was preventable. It added it was clear from the CCTV footage that the incident had escalated unnecessarily. Duncan Craig, representing Mr. Singh, admitted the CCTV footage of the attack made for unpleasant viewing, but he said the pub owner had been misled by casual staff over their right to work, as well as the unauthorised doorman who had worked at the pub for some time, who he believed held a licence. Mr. Craig said that if the pub was allowed to stay open, a more professional and appropriate setup would be put in place. He pleaded with the committee to reject calls for the licence to be revoked. A recipe for red cabbage with Christmas spices. It serves 6 to 8 people. Preparation time is 20 minutes and it takes about an hour to cook. The ingredients: 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 50 gram of butter, 1 onion thinly sliced, 1 cinnamon stick, 1/3 of a nutmeg kernel finely grated, 1/4 to 1/3 tablespoon of ground cloves to taste, 1 head of a red cabbage, cored and thinly sliced, 3 eating apples, peeled, cored and thinly sliced, 3 tablespoons of soft brown sugar or other sweetener of choice, 6 tablespoons of red wine vinegar and Maldon original salt. And the method. Number 1. In a large, heavy base pot, warm the olive oil and half the butter. Once foaming, add the onion and a pinch of Maldon sea salt. Cook gently, stirring every so often, for 10 to 15 minutes until softened and lightly browned. Add the cinnamon, nutmeg and cloves. Fry for a minute or so until fragrant, then add the cabbage and stir to coat in the spiced buttery mixture. Number 2. Add the apple, sugar and vinegar. Stir well, then turn down the heat to low. Cover the pan and leave to cook for 30 to 40 minutes until tender. Number 3. Taste for seasoning. Then add the remaining 25 gram of butter. Taste again, add in a little more sugar, vinegar or Maldon salt as needed. That recipe is from maldonsalt.com. And I will add, in my red cabbage, I do tend to add something slightly alcoholic. little bit of whiskey maybe, or some red wine if I've got some open. Second chance for addict who became mother's carer. Court told man in debt to dealer had turned over a new leaf and is spared jail term. A former drug addict caught selling cocaine to pay a debt off to his dealer avoided jail after a court heard he had turned over a new leaf, becoming a carer for his mother. Christopher Bayliss was pulled over in Oldbury in the early hours and officers found cash, two mobile phones and 12 wraps of cocaine. He claimed he was forced into dealing after falling into debt due to his own cocaine addiction. After being charged with possession with intent to supply, Bayliss moved to Kent and turned over a new leaf by kicking his habit and becoming a registered carer to his ill mother. Bayliss, 31, of Flanders Close, Sittingbourne, pled guilty to possession of a Class A drug with intent to supply and was sentenced at Wolverhampton Crown Court. In mitigation, the court heard Bayliss had no previous convictions, was no longer addicted to cocaine, and was a full-time carer for his mother, whose own alcoholism he believed was the root of his own addiction. Recorder Justin Wigoda told Bayliss his story was a familiar tale in the Black Country courts. He said, "This is a common story. A drug addict gets into debt with a dealer who forces him to do his bidding, and they are subsequently caught and, like you, have a serious criminal conviction on their record. You have stopped taking cocaine, which, if you have, is commendable. You are a carer for your mother whose alcoholism you have seen what damage it has done. And if your imprisonment will have an immediate impact on others, so in your case it would with your mother, so I am going to suspend you your 3-year sentence for 2 years. You will have to attend 30 rehabilitation days and complete 150 hours of unpaid work. You have been given a second chance. I hope you take it."
Hi, this is Kate and I'll be reading you some articles from the Express and Star. The 16th of December, relationship goals as Hegabo benefits at Baggies. Ryan Mason believes Orna Hegabo's red-hot scoring streak is down to strengthening relationships with his Albion teammates. Hegabo, 24, has rattled in 7 goals in his last 7 games for the Baggies, netting 3 in the recent home wins, which have raised pressure on Mason given the torrid away form. The £4.75 million signing from Brann, Norway, the biggest fee paid by owners Bilku in their near 2 years at the club. Took time to get up and running and managed just 2 goals and only 1 in the championship in his first 15 appearances. Mason has acknowledged Hegabo played through serious knee discomfort earlier this term, but reckons the major boost to this and to the scorer is blossoming relationships with colleagues. "I love him," Mason said. "Obviously, it's part of bringing him into the club, so it's pleasing when he scores goals because he is a striker. I think the period he had at the start of the season, his performances were also really good, but I think you need to develop relationships with his teammates. And I think the more games you play and the more training you do together, that grows." And he did have an injury for 4 or 5 weeks and was playing through it. The boss added, "At the moment, he's in a good place. He's scoring goals. I think the most important thing, if you look at the overall Sheffield United game, in brackets, was it was incredible." Family-run firm battles to rebuild after a devastating fire. Dozens of firefighters were called to tackle a severe blaze at Pork Scratchings business. A family-run pork scratchings firm says it's doing everything possible to rebuild and resume operations after a severe fire on their premises. A blaze at the G. Simmons & Sons pork scratchings factory broke out on Sunday evening and saw 13 fire engines attending the scene at the height of the incident. Crews from Bloxwich, Walsall, Aldridge, Willenhall, Wensbury, West Bromwich, Tipton, Bilston, Tetnall, Dudley, Fallings Park, Highgate and Handsworth Wood, Highgate Valley stations all attended, first arriving at the scene within 3 minutes of being mobilised. The crews worked through the night to tackle the blaze, which is believed to have involved two large drums of cooking oil, and by yesterday morning, West Midlands Fire Service said good progress had been made. No casualties or injuries have been reported, but the fire will be seen as a bitter blow for one of the market leaders and best producers of pork scratchings, cracklings and crunch, which boasts more than 40 years of experience in producing hundreds of bags of different products every day. The manufacturer is one of the few that still produces by hand in small batches and has been doing so since moving into the purpose-built factory on Newfield Close in 1994, having begun life in a butcher shop of Graham Simmons in the 1970s where he produced scratchings. Having been joined by his son Sean and Mark in the 1980s, the three saw the pork scratchings were becoming very popular during the 1990s, and while the shop itself was beginning to struggle, so they made the decision to close the shop and open up the factory in 1994. G. Simmons and Son, as it was named, developed the familiar white packaging with a green leaf on the front and became the first manufacturer in Warsaw to receive a food licence, which allowed it to export to the UK and into Europe. Since then, the factory has been extended to another unit where the warehouse and shop are based and has a third generation brand recognised across the West Midlands and beyond on its 30th year on site. The Pork Scratchings company posted about the blaze on their Facebook page. The company said, "We wanted to personally reach out and let you know that last night our factory had experienced a fire. This has been a devastating event for our family-run business and our team, and it's something we're still coming to terms with. We're incredibly grateful that no one was injured. And right now, we're carefully working through the recovery process, assessing the damage and doing everything possible to rebuild and resume operations as soon as we are able. The situation is challenging and we truly appreciate your patience, understanding and support during this difficult time." A spokesperson for West Midlands Fire Service said, "Shortly before 7:20 p.m. on Sunday, we responded to Newfield Close, Warsaw. At the height of this incident, 13 fire engines and two hydraulic aerial platforms were at the scene. This was a significant fire in an industrial estate involving two large drums of cooking oil. Firefighters wearing breathing apparatus tackled the fire. They reached higher ground using the hydraulic aerial platform and were supported by drone operations. As of 8 a.m. on Monday, good progress continues to be made as we target hotspots in one particular area of the building. As of midday yesterday, the fire service confirmed operations at this incident have now ceased. However, crews were due to revisit the site to check for hotspots." And this article is supported by a photograph of the industrial unit with firemen outside. It looks like the fire is out at this point, but you can see the damage to all of the roof of the building and the shutters. There's some pallets and other debris outside, and you can see the firemen cleaning up. Message of support for Jewish communities in West Midlands. Region's police force offers support in the aftermath of the Bondi Beach terror attack. West Midlands Police have put out a message of support and reassurance to Jewish communities across the region following the attack on Bondi Beach on Sunday. The force has put out the message to the community saying it's increased patrols around the Hanukkah events and was speaking with community representatives to offer support and reassurance. The message comes following an attack at Bondi Beach in Sydney, which saw 15 people killed when two gunmen targeted Jewish people attending a Hanukkah event, with the victims including a 10-year-old girl, a British-born rabbi, a retired police officer and a Holocaust survivor. The message from West Midlands Police reads, "After the appalling scenes which unfolded at the Hanukkah event in Bondi Beach on the weekend, we have been in touch with Jewish communities across the West Midlands. We know that what should be a time of celebration for Jewish people has now become a time of grief and anger. In the aftermath of the terror attack, we've been speaking with Jewish community representatives around the West Midlands to offer our support and reassurance at a deeply troubling time for them. With many Hanukkah events taking place around the region over the coming days, we have increased our patrols in the communities most affected. Our officers are in touch with the event organisers to offer safety advice and listen to their concerns. We will work with the communities to work tirelessly to make the West Midlands a safe place for people from all communities. Australian police said a 50-year-old man and his 24-year-old son, named in local media as Sajid and Naveed Akram, were behind the shooting. Police believe the ages of the dead range from 10 to 87. New qualifications developed to plug skills gap in the region. Higher technical qualifications will support people into medical technology jobs. New qualifications have been devised in the West Midlands in a bid to plug an estimated 145,000 skill gaps in medical technology. Higher technical qualifications, HTQs, will support people into in-demand jobs ranging from technicians working on AI-enabled health devices like wearable tech, imaging or diagnostic tools to regulatory advisors. The qualifications can be taught by colleges, private training providers and universities and have been developed in partnership between West Midlands Combined Authority, Skills England and learning company Pearson, as well as employers. The Association of British Health Tech Industries has estimated that an extra 70,000 jobs will be needed by 2035 to meet the demand across the sector, alongside 75,000 replacements for those leaving the workforce. More than 14,000 people work in the sector across the UK, with the West Midlands boasting innovation hubs, including Birmingham Health Innovation Campus, Birmingham Knowledge Quarter, Arden Cross, and West Midlands Health Tech Accelerator. The two new qualifications are being piloted with funding from the West Midlands Investment Zone. They cover levels 4 and 5, sitting between A levels and T levels, which is its level 3, and degrees in levels 6 and 7. Richard Parker, Mayor of the West Midlands, said MedTech is one of the fastest growing sectors in the West Midlands economy, which is why it plays a big role in my growth plan. We've got the UK's largest MedTech cluster, plus even more high quality jobs coming to Birmingham Knowledge Quarter. So it's essential that we ensure local people can gain the skills they need to work in this sector and the opportunities to get a foot in the door. Freya Thomas-Monk, Managing Director of Pearson Qualifications, said the qualifications provide clear progressive pathways. Our new qualifications equip learners with the skills and confidence to succeed in the medtech industry. They go beyond theory, delivering practical, sector-specific knowledge and skills that reflect real job roles, new technologies and employers' needs. Created in partnership with the West Midlands Combined Authority and local businesses, these qualifications provide clear progression pathways, helping learners plan their next steps while gaining the knowledge and expertise to adapt and thrive in one of UK's fastest-growing sectors. And Phil Smith, Chair of Skills England, added, MedTech is the future, filling skills for gaps for this fast-growing sector through these new qualifications will really be a practical way of supporting the NHS through boosting productivity. It's a fantastic example of how national and regional government can work with employers and the education sector to rapidly respond to skills needed in growth sectors. Pioneering footballer Darren celebrates Hall of Fame honour. England's most capped and decorated blind footballer shares career highlights. Darren Harris, England's most capped and decorated blind footballer, has celebrated his induction into the National Football Museum's Hall of Fame. The Wolverhampton-born Paralympian Darren made his debut for England's blind team in 1996 and went on to make 157 appearances, scoring 34 goals and winning 10 medals across European and international competitions. Darren was inducted into the Hall of Fame of the National Football Museum in Manchester during the Parasports Awards. He said it was truly special to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. The 52-year-old who grew up near the Chapel Ash area of Wolverhampton, took up football after he was diagnosed with bilateral retinoblastoma, a type of cancer that left him blind when he was 15 months old. He said, "As I got older, my sight just kept getting worse and worse, and I do think that if I had used my eye drops more, it might not have deteriorated so quickly. I was going for my annual checkups and they were telling me that my sight was getting worse and that there was nothing they could do about it. So as a young lad, I just stopped going, as no news is good news. And if I'm going to hear this bad news, then what was the point of going?" Darren's sporting aspirations began during his time at New College, Worcester, a school for students with visual impairments. He had studied maths at university and began a career in information technology before he took the sport back up. He said that while it was an honour to make his debut for his country in 1996, it wasn't exactly a success. He said, "I was a substitute, and while the coach told me that he was going to put me on for 2 minutes, he took me off more or less straight away as I was that bad. It was because I had a little bit of light perception, and putting on a blindfold was completely disorientating. So I was bumping into my teammates, the opposition and the boards, so they took me off for my own safety. Being selected was a proud moment though, and I'll always remember my first training camp and having the hunger and drive." The Wolverhampton-born star, who was former beneficiary of the Beacon Centre for the Blind, became captain in 2002, 6 years after his debut, and helped his side qualify for the Athens Paralympic Games in 2004. He later began training full-time in judo, competing at the Beijing Paralympics in 2008, before returning to football to play at the London Paralympics in 2012. Since his retirement, Darren has worked as a motivational speaker, performance consultant and inclusion advocate, championing accessibility. He said that while it had been a tough road to retirement, he said he felt he'd done it on his own terms and that he was very proud of what he'd done. "When I came back for that last run, I thought about how I wanted to finish on my own terms, and I worked really hard for those 2 years and played some of my best football." And the article is supported by a picture of Darren with his England jacket, his England cap, and it looks like his award into the Hall of Fame. There's also a picture of Darren in the gym working out on a rowing machine, and also a picture of him next to the sign of the Beacon Centre for the Blind.
West Brom striker Orn Hegerbo took his championship tally for the season to 8 goals, with the opener against Sheffield United by Ian Woodcock, BBC Sport, England. West Bromwich Albion picked up a much-needed win to end Sheffield United's 6-game unbeaten run in the Championship. Gus Hamer forced a fine early save from Albion goalkeeper Joe Wildsmith as the Blades started the brighter of the two in a quiet first half. The home side took the lead shortly after the restart, when Olne Hegerbo confidently slotted home his 7th goal in his past 7 matches from George Campbell's low cross. Ryan Mason's men had won just one of their past 5 matches, but were dominant after going ahead and doubled their lead when Carlin Grant thundered a shot in off the underside of the bar. Replays showed Grant clipped the heels of United defender Mark McGuinness as he latched on to Hegerbo's pass, but a second goal was no less than they deserved, and Ousmane Diakite should have made it 3 soon after, but sliced over from a few yards. Victory moved Albion back up to 14th and 3 points off the top 6, while Chris Wilder's Blades stay 17th. The victory was a 5th in 10 home league games for Mason's side, while they have lost 8 of their 11 games on the road. Successive reverses at QPR and Southampton meant the rookie boss came into this game under pressure for a result, which ultimately they picked up with something to spare. It was the Blades who made 6 changes from the 1-1 draw with Norwich on Tuesday, who looked the most likely for the majority of the first half, with Hamer's rifled effort, drawing a quality save from Wildsmith and Patrick Bamford, failing to make the most of a decent opportunity after lax Albion play at the back. Hegerbo missed a good chance to put the hosts in front just before the break, when he miscued, but the Norway international quickly made amends. The informed 24-year-old striker was involved in the build-up to the goal with some good forward play to get the ball out wide to Campbell down the right, and he did not have to break stride to convert the American's low cross. With his side suddenly looking off the pace, Wilder quickly made two changes, but it was 2-0 moments later. Grant got his first of the campaign in Tuesday's 3-2 loss at Southampton and made it 2-2 with a blistering 18-yard strike. Complaints from McGuinness that he was tripped by Grant fell on deaf ears, and thereafter the lacklustre Blades never threatened to get back into the match, and West Brom looked capable of adding further gloss to the scoreline. Albion will look to build on this and end their poor away form when they travelled to Hull City next Saturday, while United host Birmingham City on the same afternoon.
We must now be clear about how your information is used and the steps we take to ensure it is secure. When you asked to receive recordings produced by the Sandwell Talking News, you gave your name and address so that we could send you our memory sticks or CDs. This information is stored in a secure database, and address labels are also stored in a secure location. Having left our premises, the address labels and postal wallets are then under the protection and care of Royal Mail. Your contact details are only used for sending you our memory sticks or CDs, and will never be forwarded to a third party. If you ask us to stop sending the Sandwell Talking News to you, your contact details will be deleted from our database and your address labels will be permanently destroyed. We promise and assure you that we take data protection seriously and make every effort to meet the requirements of the Data Protection Act. If your circumstances do change, you move home, change your phone number, or wish to unsubscribe to the Sandwell Talking News, please call the office on 0121 525 4810 or email sandwelltn@gmail.com so that we can make the necessary changes.
Some audio described TV programmes for the next week along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Now for a selection of the audio described television programmes for the week starting Saturday the 20th and ending Friday the 26th of December. Compiled by Sarah and read by Chris. We're officially into the Christmas period, so expect some changes to the regular schedule. Let's start with a cracker joke. Why are Christmas trees so bad at sewing? Because they keep dropping their needles. Moving on, let's see what delights there are for you on Saturday. Start your morning with Nigella's Christmas Table on BBC One at 11. Or if you prefer something a bit more wild, Gordon Buchanan follows the reindeer of Finnish Lapland over on BBC Two, also at 11. In the afternoon, there's the popular film Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb, starring Ben Stiller and Robin Williams on BBC One at 2:30. For something a bit more classy, there's Jane Austen's Sense and Sensibility on BBC Two at 2:50. Early evening at 6 on BBC Two, there's a film based on the much-loved BBC sitcom Porridge, starring Ronnie Barker as Norman Fletcher. Alternatively, there's high-octane drama on ITV at 6:35 with Die Another Day, one of the many Bond films which will no doubt make an appearance over the holiday season. The big event on BBC One on Saturday is the Strictly final, which starts at 7, when after weeks of fierce competition, we find out who will finally lift the glitter ball. Channel 4 are offering two evening films, starting with the Bruce Willis classic Christmas movie, Die Hard, at 9, followed by Apocalypse Now, the final cut, at 11:50. Now on to Sunday. At 12 on BBC One, there's A Very Merry Christmas, when Mary celebrates delicious Christmas traditions. Songs of Praise is on BBC One at 1:15 with carols from Bolton. Not audio described, but may still be of interest, the Hairy Bikers make an outing on BBC Two at 1:15 with Coming Home for Christmas, when they hunt for seasonal ingredients to create a festive banquet. The Christmas theme continues on ITV with the 1946 film It's a Wonderful Life at 12:45. Stay on ITV to enjoy the blockbuster adventure Jurassic Park. In the evening, the BBC One drama War Between the Land and the Sea continues at 8:05 and is followed by this week's sunny episode of Beyond Paradise. Jason Manford compares the annual extravaganza from the Royal Variety Performance from the Royal Albert Hall over on ITV at 7:05. It's the final of Game of Wool, Britain's Best Knitter, with Tom Daley on Channel 4 at 8. This is followed by 24 Hours in Police Custody, when we follow the investigation of a Norfolk narco cartel. Cracker joke time. What do you get when you cross a snowman with a vampire? Why, frostbite, of course. There's some changes with the timings of the soaps this week. On Monday, it's EastEnders and Emmerdale at 7:30 and Corrie at 8. Tuesday, it's Emmerdale at 7 and EastEnders at 7:30. Wednesday, that's Christmas Eve, EastEnders and Emmerdale are both at 6:55 and Corrie at 8:40. On Christmas Day, Emmerdale is on at 6:15, followed by Corrie at 7:15 and EastEnders at 7:45 and again at 9:45. On Boxing Day, Emmerdale is on at 6:30 and Coronation Street at 7. Now on to Monday. In the morning, Ben Fogle and Kate Humble give Christmas treats to a lonely tapir in Animal Park on BBC One at 10:15. This is followed by Celebrity Homes Under the Hammer. For more nature, Gordon Buchanan is back on the box in Wild Horse, The Rockies and Me, on BBC Two at 1:25. Channel 4 has a run of AD programmes, starting at 4 with Christmas at Chatsworth House, followed by Jamie's Cook Ahead Christmas. You can get up close and personal with Inside Legoland at Christmas at 6:30. And finally, the toy theme continues with Hamley's Top 100 Toys of All Time. In the evening on BBC Two, there's Secrets of the Conclave at 9 with exclusive footage from the Vatican and interviews with cardinals who helped to elect Pope Leo the 14th in May. Amanda and Alan's Spanish Christmas is on BBC One at 9, when the couple return to the sun-soaked village of Mocklin to thank locals who supported their summer renovations. For a late film, you can choose between horror comedy Beetlejuice on BBC Two at 10:45 or action fantasy comedy Violent Night on Channel 4 at 10. Moving on to Tuesday, for fun and frolics on BBC One at 1:50, there's Wallace and Gromit, A Grand Day Out, or superhero drama Spider-Man, No Way Home, later on in the afternoon at 3:34, also on BBC One. Christmas Treasures of the National Trust is on BBC Two at 2, when we are invited to visit festive preparations at Cragside, Colton Fishacre and Tudor House, Cote Hill. On a similar theme, there's A Very British Christmas, Kensington Palace, on Channel 4 at 8. Arsenal and Crystal Palace are in the quarterfinals in League Cup football on ITV at 7:30. No AD, but might be of interest to any fans. Later in the evening, you can watch First Dates at Christmas on Channel 4 at 9, when we meet retired nurse Linda, who hasn't been on a date for 16 years. Christmas Eve cracker joke warning. Did you hear about the man who stole the advent calendar? He got 25 days. Start your afternoon with the delightful animated film The Snowman on Channel 4 at 3:35. In addition to the soaps, there's plenty of choice in the evening, including the Great British Sewing Bee Celebrity Special on BBC One at 7:25, or Royal Carols Together at Christmas on ITV at 7:25, when the Princess of Wales hosts the 5th annual carol concert from Westminster Abbey. Mortimer and Whitehouse Gone Christmas Fishing is on BBC Two at 9. Bob and Paul travel to Devon and Cornwall and are joined by celebrity friends for a festive feast of turbot. Love Actually makes its usual Christmas appearance on ITV at 10 past 9. And if you are a plate, there is Midnight Mass from Our Lady of the English Martyrs, Cambridge, on BBC One at 10 to midnight. Now for Christmas Day, Ho Ho Ho. On BBC Two at 1 p.m, there's the classic film White Christmas, which is followed by the King's Christmas Day Address at 3 p.m. This appears to be on all the main channels. After the King on ITV at 3:10, there's Action Adventure with Raiders of the Lost Ark. Or for something more gentle, there's The Scarecrow's Wedding Animation on BBC One at 3:10. At 5 on BBC Two, enjoy a celebration of Dad's Army, narrated by Toby Jones. Early in the evening on BBC One, there's a Christmas Strictly Come Dancing special. Or if that's not your idea of fun, Channel 4 are showing the film Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. A selection of your evening options include Call the Midwife on BBC One at 8:15, Bullseye with Freddie Flintoff on ITV at the same time, or over on Channel 4 at 8, there's a Peep Show reunion in The Great British Christmas Bake Off. If you fancy a film, there's Jaws on BBC Two at 9:15, festive action comedy Red One on ITV at 11:10, or romantic comedy Notting Hill on Channel 4 at 11:15. Finally, Boxing Day, and the final cracker joke. What goes oh, oh, oh? That's Father Christmas walking backwards. Afternoon films today include The Italian Job on BBC Two at 10 past 3, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom on ITV at 4:15, or Paddington 2 on BBC One at 5:20. The staff at Wood Green Pets charity returned to find their canine changes the perfect new home in time for Christmas in the doghouse on Channel 4 at 6:45. This is followed by the festive pottery throwdown with celebrity novice potters. Staying with crafting, the repair shop at Christmas is on BBC One at 7:30, with special guests including Dame Helen Mirren, who is seeking the repair of a broken cello. There's another episode of Call the Midwife on BBC One at 8:30, or a Christmas edition of The Masked Singer on ITV at 7:10. You can round the day off with a film. Your choices are Four Weddings and a Funeral on BBC One at 10:15, Jaws 2 on BBC Two at 11, or Die Another Day on ITV at 10:15. Hopefully, you'll find something of interest over the festive period.
This is Gilly with the radio listings for Saturday the 20th to Friday the 26th of December 2025, compiled by Wendy. Starting with Saturday 20th of December, and first off, a perennial favourite, the incomparable Morecambe and Wise Christmas Show from 1977 is on Radio 4 Extra at 2 p.m. and 8 p.m. Sue Perkins's comedy Christmas Stocking continues with programmes starring Ronnie Barker and Tony Hawks on Radio 4 Extra at 3 p.m. and 9 p.m. Today's drama is Sense and Sensibility on Radio 4 at 3:15 p.m. Part 2 is tomorrow at 3 p.m. Moving on to Sunday the 21st of December. There are two classic comedies on Radio 4 Extra. Raise a Laugh at 10 a.m, 3 p.m. and 9 p.m. immediately followed by Take It From Here at 10:30 a.m, 3:30 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. The castaway in Desert Island Discs is actor and director Kate Winslet on Radio 4 at 10 a.m, while in an archive edition from 1999, the late Patricia Routledge is the castaway on Radio 4 Extra at 6 a.m, 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. Words and Music has poetry, prose and music inspired by the words of the 12 Days of Christmas on Radio 3 at 6 p.m. It's followed by One Singular Sensation, presented by Katie Derham, celebrating the 50th anniversary of the influential musical A Chorus Line on Radio 3 at 7:15 p.m. A Very British Christmas is made up of recordings made by people across the country on Christmas Day last year, encompassing the full gamut of emotions of life in modern Britain. Radio 4 at 7:15 p.m. Turning now to those programmes which are broadcast at the same time every day from Monday to Friday. The book of the week is Around the Table. Diana Henry reads from her collection of essays on the joys of good food. It's on Radio 4 at 11:45 a.m. Monday to Friday. Sir Derek Jacobi reads from a collection of writings by Laurie Lee in Village Christmas on Radio 4 Extra at 8:30 a.m, 1:30 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. Ladies of Letters Make Mincemeat is a chance to hear a seasonal series of the comedy starring Patricia Routledge and Prunella Scales, who both died this year. It's on Radio 4 Extra at 8:45 a.m, 1:45 p.m. and 7:45 p.m. Who Are You in Winnie the Pooh celebrates the 100th anniversary of A.A. Milne's stories by asking some of Britain's celebrated children's writers who they most identify with in the stories, starting on Monday with Piglet. Radio 4 at 1:45 p.m. every day this week. In the Composer of the Week slot, this week the programme focuses on a period in history rather than an individual composer. A Georgian Christmas is on Radio 3 at 4 p.m. each day. In the series The Essay, Winterreise brings us three Christmas tales about winter journeys inspired by Schubert's song cycle of that name, on Radio 3 at 9:45 p.m. on Monday to Wednesday this week. The book at bedtime is Christmas Days, written and read by Jeanette Winterson, on Radio 4 at 10:45 p.m. each day. Now here are some individual programmes to listen to through the week, starting with Monday the 22nd of December. A Child's Christmas explores Christmas tales written through the eyes of a child on Radio 4 at 12 noon. There's an episode from 1974 of Dad's Army on Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 a.m, 12:30 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. The In Tune Christmas Special features a range of seasonal repertoire, plus special guest readers offering traditional Christmas tales and festive stories. Radio 3 at 5 p.m. a new series of the comedy panel show The Unbelievable Truth begins on Radio 4 at 6:30 p.m. And a performance of Handel's Messiah, recorded at St Martin in the Fields in London, is on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. Some suggestions now for Tuesday the 23rd of December. Oh Yes I Am is a history of the pantomime on Radio 4 Extra at 10:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. And in a special edition of This Natural Life, Martha Kearney talks to King Charles III about his love of the natural world as they walk together through the walled garden at Dumfries House in Ayrshire. It's on Radio 4 at 12 noon. Plum in Prison is a drama inspired by P.G. Woodhouse's Second World War internment and the radio broadcasts he made that called his loyalties into question on Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. The subject of this week's Lady Killers with Lucy Wellesley is Amelia Haslett, Lady Killer in My Family, on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. A Christmas Card by Paul Theroux is a dramatisation of his 1978 novella on Radio 4 Extra at 3 p.m. and 9 p.m. In Radio 3 in Concert, Harry Christophers and the 16 take listeners on a musical journey that celebrates the heart of Christmas, recorded in London. Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. And as always, Peter White brings us his regular programme In Touch, with news and information for people who are blind or partially sighted. It's on Radio 4 at 8:40 p.m. In Ramblings, Claire Balding celebrates her 25th year on the programme by walking Spain's pilgrimage network in the Camino de Santiago on Radio 4 at 9:30 p.m. The programme continues tomorrow at the same time. Moving on to Christmas Eve, Wednesday 24th of December. In the first of a four-part series, two Nottingham lads tells how two men, both born in Nottingham, met in a prison in occupied Ukraine. Radio 4 at 9:30 a.m. Following the death in September of iconic cricket umpire Dickie Bird, An Hour with Dickie Bird, first recorded in 1997, is on Radio 4 Extra at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. An adaptation of P.G. Woodhouse's Jeeves and Wooster novel Joy in the Morning is on Radio 4 at 12 noon and concludes on Boxing Day at the same time. One of his best. The traditional festival of Nine Lessons and Carols from the Chapel of King's College, Cambridge, is on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. and can be heard again tomorrow at 1 p.m. on Radio 3. Choral Evensong comes from the St Martin's in the Fields Church, London, on Radio 3 at 3 p.m. In This Cultural Life, actor Bill Nighy talks about some of the earliest influences on his career on Radio 4 at 7:15 p.m. Radio 3 in Concert has a Christmas journey of carols and literature on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. Then, on Christmas Day, Thursday the 25th of December, Radio 4 Extra devotes the whole day to programmes requested by listeners, including Christmas at Dingley Dell, with readings from Dickens's Pickwick Papers and Christmas Stories, at 6 a.m, 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. A dramatisation of Dylan Thomas's A Child's Christmas in Wales at 9 a.m. The Tale of Gloucester by Beatrix Potter, read by Miriam Margulies, at 3:15 and 9:15 p.m. And Papa Panov's special day about a shoemaker who hopes to catch a glimpse of Jesus, read by Johnny Morris, at 3:45 p.m. and 9:45 p.m. All these are on Radio 4 Extra. Elsewhere, there's a Christmas service from Leeds Catholic Cathedral on Radio 4 at 7 a.m. The reunion brings together key players from Downton Abbey on Radio 4 at 9 a.m. There's a look back at the year's radio highlights in Pick of the Year. The first of two parts is on Radio 4 at 12 noon, whilst Alexander Armstrong counts down the top 30 of the nation's favourite carol on Classic FM at 1 p.m. Not to be missed, the King's annual Christmas message is on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. and, of course, on television. Bill Bailey and his band perform carols, songs and readings in With Great Pleasure at Christmas, which also stars Sir Trevor MacDonald as Father Christmas in Tolkien's Letters to His Children, Radio 4 at 5 p.m. And so to Boxing Day, Friday the 26th of December. The Red House Mystery is a dramatisation of A.A. Milne's 1922 Whodunit on Radio 4 Extra at 6 a.m, 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. And there's a festive episode from 1976 of Steptoe and Son on Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 a.m, 12:30 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. And Yet Another Partridge in a Pear Tree is a comedy starring Penelope Keith on Radio 4 Extra at 8:10 a.m, 1:10 p.m. and 7:10 p.m. Dead Funny History looks at the history of football on Radio 4 at 2:45 p.m. To finish, Gershwin and Miss Swift is a biographical work recalling the true story of composer Kay Swift and her 10-year love affair with George Gershwin, including music by both Swift and Gershwin, on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. Enjoy your festive listening.
TNS Soundings.
New online Blue Badge service slashes waiting times from 3 months to less than a week. Sandwell Council has launched a new online application process to give residents a quicker, easier and more convenient way to apply for a Blue Badge. The new service, which went live on the 10th of November, allows people to complete their application online at a time that suits them via the My Sandwell portal, removing the need for paper forms or in-person appointments. Since launching, the digital system has transformed how applications are handled and significantly improved waiting times, ensuring people receive the support they need much sooner. In the first month, more than 500 applications have been handled online, and decision times have been cut from an average of 12 weeks to just 4 days. Angela from Wensbury used the new system. She said, "The new Blue Badge system was really easy to use, and I completed the online form really quickly for my husband's new Blue Badge. If I can do it, anyone can." The move was driven by feedback from residents and adult social care services and reflects the council's ambition to provide a first-class service to customers. Alongside the online service, the council has ensured free offline support remains available for anyone who needs help completing their application. This includes the community office service funded by the council, which provides free support across the borough, both face-to-face and over the phone, ensuring the service is accessible for everyone. Residents can access the new online application service via the My Sandwell portal and find out more by going to sandwell.gov.uk/bluebadge or visiting the council website and searching Blue Badge. Blue Badge Team.
TNS Soundings.
This is Colin with an article written by Fiona about the problems that guide dog owners can have in accessing shops, businesses and services. This can be a problem all year round, but at this time of the year it results in many visually impaired people feeling excluded from Christmas festivities. As preparations for the festive season get underway, many of us are looking forward to social occasions, such as dinner with friends, parties and family get-togethers. This should be the season of good cheer for everyone, including for people with visual impairments who use assistance dogs. Sadly, however, that's not always the case. The guide dog charity reports that owners of guide dogs continue to face access refusals. Often, businesses and services, including cafes, shops and taxis, refuse entry to people accompanied by guide dogs, despite this almost always being illegal. Ruby Jay, a guide dog owner from Colchester, shared her experiences, saying, "I've been illegally refused service about 25 times this year. It's humiliating and stressful. I'm even skipping my Christmas party to avoid facing another rejection." As part of its Open Doors campaign, the Guide Dog Charity reports on its website that 75% of guide dog owners say they've experienced an access refusal in the past. Advice on the Guide Dog's website advises that businesses should train their staff to recognise assistance dogs and to understand current equality legislation that allows access to those with assistance dogs. Wrongly refusing entry can have serious consequences for guide dog owners. A guide dog owner in Stevenage says, "Each refusal is crushing, confidence-shattering, rejecting and traumatic. I always feel that I don't want to go out after, but work dictates I must." In Wales, the Pembrokeshire Herald reports that Sue Canham, a guide dog owner from Tenby, has also experienced discrimination. Recently, six taxis at Cardiff train station refused to transport her and her guide dog. Sue has also faced refusals at restaurants and pubs, raising serious concerns about the treatment of visually impaired individuals. As recently as November, two taxi drivers in Bradford were fined £600 each and stripped of their licences for refusing to pick up a passenger with a guide dog. Another taxi driver who refused to allow two blind customers to get into his vehicle with their guide dogs at Chester Railway Station was fined £200. Guide Dogs Open Doors campaign explains that under the Equality Act of 2010, guide dog and other assistance dog owners have the right to enter most services, premises and vehicles with their dogs. But sadly, more than 40% of guide dog owners who faced an access refusal last year had been turned away from food and drink premises. Siobhan Mead from Stevenage in Hertfordshire, a guide dog owner since 2003, says she has been refused access at least 30 times. Ms. Mead told ITV News Anglia that she hung her head in shame the first time it happened. "I just didn't know what to do," she said. "I just felt humiliated standing on the doorstep, knowing that I was allowed to go in, with everyone watching me. It just felt so embarrassing. Nobody should ever feel like they don't belong. Because at the end of the day, we're all one medical condition or accident away from disability. Disability doesn't discriminate. It's sad and upsetting to find some of our friends and neighbours may be prevented from making the most of the festive season because some individuals refuse them access with their guide dog." On the website www.guidedogs.org.uk, you'll find information for businesses and for taxi and private hire vehicles, which are available to download as PDF files.
TNS Soundings.
The positive results from the first 2 months of alternate weekly collections. Sandwell residents are recycling more and putting less in their grey bins since the introduction of the new alternate weekly collection, AWC, waste service. Since the service went live on the 15th of September, there has been a significant reduction in the amount of residual waste collected, and the amounts of food waste and paper and card collected for recycling has gone up. Key achievements in October and November include the amount of residual waste collected reduced to 4,163 tons in November, down from a peak of 5,416 tons earlier this year. 1,100 tons of paper and card recovered. The first time this material has been captured in such quantities. A significant rise in the number of households separating food waste, with tonnages tripling from around 50 tons every month before AWC was implemented, to 168 tons in November. Under the new service, recycling and residual waste are collected on alternating weeks, with materials now separated for improved quality. Glass, cans and plastics continue to go in the blue-lidded bin, while paper and card are placed in new recycling bags. Under this system, Sandwell's waste contractor, Serco, collect more than 793,000 bins and bags each month. Councillor Keith Alcock, Cabinet Member for Environment and Highways, said, "I know some residents are finding the changes more difficult, and we have a range of support available for specific circumstances, all of which can be found on the Council's website. We also have a fantastic team of enthusiastic recycling support officers who are more than happy to visit residents who may need extra help or guidance. We must all continue to be careful about what goes in our recycling bins. We're still seeing large amounts of bagged waste in blue-lidded bins, and I'd like to remind residents that bin bags and carrier bags must not go in recycling. But overall, the new service is bedding in really well, and I again want to thank our supportive residents. These changes were made to meet the government's simpler recycling legislation and to help Sandwell improve recycling quality, increase the recycling rates, and reduce disposal costs. Over time, this will also make services more efficient and environmentally friendly. With the festive period now underway, residents are encouraged to recycle right this Christmas.
Well, it's that time of year again. The time for baubles, lights, mistletoe and tinsel.
Oh, Bob loves a bit of tinsel, don't
you? Do you know,
you?
There's nothing quite like tinsel when it's round your neck and you can feel it tickling.
Ooh. Oh, dear. Anyway, I think the best thing is the jokes from the crackers.
Really? Is that what you think?
Yeah, I love cracker jokes.
They have me in stitches, Jill.
Okay, then, what about this one? Which of Santa's reindeers has the best moves?
The best moves? What, on the dance floor? I don't know, Jill. Which of the reindeers does?
Dancer.
Dancer.
What about turkey? I love a bit of turkey at Christmas. So why was the turkey in a pop group?
I don't know, Jill. Why was a turkey in a pop group?
Because he was the only one who had drumsticks.
How did the ornament get addicted to Christmas?
I know that one. He's been hooked on trees all his life.
Is he a bit of a tree hanger?
Something like that. Maybe a tree hugger too.
A tree hugger too, yeah.
So what would you call an elf who's just won the lottery?
An elf winning the lottery. Well, that's amazing. What would you call him, Jill?
I'd say he was very wealthy.
Wealthy?
Let's try this one and see how you like this one. What beats his chest and swings from Christmas cake to Christmas cake?
I know that one, Jill.
Go on.
It's Tarzipan.
What's the difference between Santa Claus and a knight?
Well, one slays a dragon. And what does the other one do, Jill?
The other drags a sleigh.
Why has Santa Claus been banned from sooty chimneys?
Oh, it's all to do with his carbon footprints.
Mucky boots all over the living room.
That's the one. Why do you never see Father Christmas in hospital?
Because he's in private elf care.
We all have to spend lots of money at Christmas, but what do you think Santa spends his wages on?
Oh, I don't know. Is it all the elves?
No, it's his jingle bells.
Oh.
Now, you'll like this one. What falls from the North Pole but never gets hurt?
Oh, do you know, it's that fluttering white snow that just drops from the sky down onto the ground so, so softly.
Oh, he's such a romantic. Hey, did you hear the one about the burglar who robbed an advent calendar factory?
No, I didn't, Jill.
He got 25 days.
Wow.
Who loves a bit of turkey at Christmas?
I like turkey at Christmas.
When is Christmas dinner bad for your health, though?
Well, it's when you're a turkey.
Yeah, it mustn't be much good being a turkey at Christmas. Anyway, what's every parent's favourite Christmas carol?
Do you know, It's when you go to bed at night and you switch the light off and it all goes dark and you settle back, all cuddly and cosy, and you have a brilliant silent night.
No children making a noise. They've all gone to bed, opened all their presents. So what's a dog's favourite carol then?
It's bark. The herald angels sing.
Mm, dear. So what do you call a polar bear that wears earmuffs then?
Well, do you know, Jill, you can call it whatever you want because he can't hear you.
This is a nice one. What did one Christmas light say to the other Christmas light?
Oh, I don't know, Jill. Go on, tell me.
They said, you light up my life.
Oh, Jill.
What did Santa do when he went speed dating?
Santa speed dating, all dressed up and everything. Yeah,
pulled a cracker.
Oh, did he now? He's a lucky lad.
How does Darth Vader enjoy his Christmas turkey?
Ah, well, Darth, he likes a bit on the dark side.
He does. This one's a bit naughty. What do you get if Santa forgets to wear his undercrackers?
Oh, I wouldn't know that, Jill, because I'm never naughty.
A very chilly Nicholas. Why is it getting harder to buy advent calendars?
I know this one, Jill. It's because the days are numbered.
Exactly. And why did Santa quit smoking?
I don't know, Jill. Why did he quit smoking?
Because it was bad for his health.
Oh, no.
What about a political joke?
Political, Jill? You can't be political at Christmas.
Oh, you can. Why is Parliament like ancient Bethlehem?
I don't know, Jill. Why?
Because it takes a miracle to find three wise men there.
That is just so true.
Who hides in the bakery at Christmas?
Now, how would I know if they're hiding, Jill?
It's a mince pie.
Oh, no.
What do the elves call it when Father Christmas claps his hands at the end of a play?
Oh, it's brilliant. It's Santa Claus.
It is. Now, when anyone has a baby, they always want to know what the weight is. And how did Mary and Joseph know Jesus' weight when he was born?
Don't know.
They had a way in a manger.
Oh, no. Very good, though. Very good.
How do snowmen get around?
They ride their icicle.
They do. I like a bidding on eBay, but why did no one bid for Rudolph and Dasher on eBay?
Oh, I don't know, Jill. Have they not advertised it properly?
No, they were too dear.
Oh.
How about this one? What do reindeer hang on their Christmas trees?
I don't. What would a reindeer hang on its Christmas
Think
tree?
Think about it. What does a reindeer have?
Oh, I don't.
Hornaments.
Hornaments, right. Well, if a reindeer hangs its hornaments on a Christmas tree, what do snowmen wear on their heads?
Ice caps. What did Adam say the day before Christmas?
It's Christmas, Eve.
What does snowman have for breakfast?
Oh, snowflakes.
They do. Why couldn't the skeleton go to the Christmas party?
Oh, I don't know. Why didn't he go?
Because he had nobody to go with.
Oh, that's so sad.
Well, who do Santa's helpers call when they're ill?
Oh, that's an easy one. That's the National Health Service.
That is. And finally, and you're probably glad we're finishing with this one, what's Tarzan's favourite Christmas song?
Oh, now, what is it, Jill?
Jungle Bells.
Oh, no.
Anyway, we hope these have made you laugh and we'd like to wish you all a very Merry Christmas.
From Sound and Vision.
With Bob and Jill.
Yeah. Have a great time.
Happy Christmas.
Bye.
TNF Soundings.
This is Jan with some seasonal tips and ideas from the gardening expert at the MK Pulse magazine based in Milton Keynes. Foliage for festive times. It's one of the most appealing of all festive sights. A Christmas wreath hung on a front door, giving cheer to passers-by and welcoming visitors to the home. Many of us buy wreaths each year, and some of us book onto those Learn How to Make Your Own sessions, which can be a lovely way to share in the creativity with others. And with a seasonal cup of mulled wine and a cheeky mince pie, it's a very sociable thing to do. But really, wreaths aren't that hard to make from scratch. You just need a nice selection of foliage, long-lasting greenery like eucalyptus, fir, conifer and spruce. Holly is often used in wreaths, but you don't need the berries. Our feathered friends will use those for nutrition during the cold months, and their need is greater than ours. If your holly is berry bare, it doesn't matter. Don't be afraid to add other colour too. Fallen oak leaves that are browned look magnificent, cutting through the many shades of green for a real contrast. You might have the necessary foliage in your garden, but if not, forage responsibly. You can also make your own wreath ring by twisting willow and vines into that necessary circular shape, or purchase a metal one from your local florist, who will also be able to set you up with some garden twine or paddle wire necessary for holding that foliage in place. The size of your wreath is down to the size of your door and personal choice, but the art of making it is the same regardless. Foliage needs to be arranged into small bunches, which you can either tie together with the wire or fix straight onto the wreath by winding the wire securely around the bottom of the bunch. Remember, the leaves aren't being watered, hence the need to use evergreens, which will serve you for longer. But even so, you'll need to secure them tightly. They will shrink a little as they dry, and you don't want a wilting wreath after a week or two. Take your time as you fix the stems in place, ensuring the space in the centre of your wreath keeps its circular shape, and the foliage and stems completely cover the wreath ring. Placing each bunch over the bottom of the previous bunch will give a continuous aesthetic, and that's what you need to aim for. Every wreath has its own charm, so treat it that way. Don't be uniform with the greenery. There are so many textures and colours, and it's lovely to mix them and allow everything to shine. Foliage looks fabulous on its own, but if you do want to add more colour and texture and haven't already used berries, remember that pine cones are wonderfully abundant and look great too. Just use any additions sparingly to set the wreath off rather than complicate it. Happy designing. And a top tip. Lots of people bring flowers into the home at Christmas. Orchids and poinsettias are popular choices, but a Christmas cactus can be fabulous too. Super easy to maintain. The cacti originated in the Brazilian rainforest, and naturally they like humidity. Our selection thrive in the kitchen, but they will be just as at home in the bathroom. These plants work up a thirst, but never allow them to sit in water. Stem rot is the enemy. In fact, you should only water the base of your plant once the soil has dried out. Ours have withstood some pretty dramatic times and come back brighter. If you treat them well, they will reward you with beautiful blooms. The plants can deliver an abundance of flowers, and they aren't just for Christmas. They'll last for decades.
Sandwell Trading Standards warns families about dangerous fake toys. This Christmas, Sandwell Trading Standards is urging parents and carers to be on high alert this Christmas after seizing large numbers of counterfeit toys that could put children's safety at risk. Fake versions of popular toys, including La Boo Boo dolls, K-pop demon hunters, Marvel figures, Pokemon merchandise, and Disney's Lilo and Stitch products, have been removed from sale by officers in recent weeks. Many of these imitations pose serious dangers, despite looking like the real thing. With Christmas shopping now in full swing and the pressure on families rising, the temptation to buy cheaper alternatives online or from unofficial sellers may be strong. But Trading Standards officers warn that counterfeit toys can come with hidden and sometimes life-threatening risks. Among the toys seized were imitation La Boo Boo dolls. When officers inspected them, they found that the dolls' heads and hands detached easily, creating an immediate choking hazard for young children. Other toys, including K-pop Demon Hunter dolls and Marvel action figures, have also been identified as fakes. Further testing will now be carried out to check for excessive levels of phthalates, chemicals sometimes used to soften plastics. High levels of phthalates have been linked to long-term health problems, including potential harm to the reproductive system, liver damage, and increased risks of cancer, asthma, and allergies. Councillor Suzanne Hartwell, Sandwell Council's deputy leader and cabinet member for neighbourhoods and community, said, "Thanks to the hard work of our trading standards team, we've helped prevent some potentially deadly toys falling into children's hands. We are asking people to think twice before snapping up what looks like a bargain. Counterfeit toys are often poorly made, can break easily, and may fail even basic safety checks. Although these products may be cheap, the risks simply aren't worth it. We want everyone in Sandwell to have a safe and happy festive season. how to avoid buying fake or unsafe toys. Residents are encouraged to follow these simple steps when shopping online or in stores. Look for a proper CE or UKCA safety mark on the toy and its packaging. Be cautious of prices that seem unusually low. Buy from reputable shops or trusted online retailers. Check that the product lists a UK name and address for the manufacturer or importer. Once the toy arrives, double-check the safety markings and contact details. Always follow age recommendations and make sure instructions are in English.
Hello, I'm David, and here are some radio highlights for this coming week. I hope you will enjoy your listening this week as we move towards and into the new year. On Saturday, the 27th of December, Radio 4 starts a new series on soul music with a compilation from 25 years of the series. Soul Music at 25 is on Radio 4 at 9 a.m. You can hear some vintage comedy with Beyond Our Ken on Radio 4 Extra at 2:30 p.m., repeated at 8:30 p.m. Murder in the Cathedral, an adaptation of T.S. Eliot's play about the murder of Thomas Becket, is on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. Mozart's opera Così fan tutti from La Scala in Milan is on Radio 3 at 6 p.m. Also on Saturday, Radio 4 Extra brings you The Crowning of Everest, a look back at the British Mount Everest expedition and the coronation of Elizabeth II in 1953. The Crowning of Everest is on Radio 4 Extra at 6:30 p.m. The annual BBC New Year's Concert with the BBC's New Generation Artists is at 7:05 p.m. on the BBC World Service. And then Sunday, the 28th of December. Sunday worship with composer John Rutter, reflecting on carols that have shaped his life, is on Radio 4 at 8:10 a.m. Radio 2 presents a tribute to the late disc jockey Johnny Walker, with many tributes and anecdotes. Johnny Walker, A Celebration, is on Radio 2 at 3 p.m. Choral Evensong from St Martin's in the Fields Church in London is on Radio 3 at 3 p.m. And also at 3 p.m, Radio 4 brings you The Last of the Mohicans, an adaptation of James Fenimore Cooper's novel set in 18th century America. The Last of the Mohicans is on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. Vintage comedy on Radio 4 Extra is a 1960 episode of Raise a Laugh on Radio 4 Extra at 3 p.m. and repeated at 9 p.m. Pick of the Year, a look back at the year's radio highlights, is on Radio 4 at 6:15 p.m, repeated on Friday at midday. Just One Thing with Michael Mosley, Think Yourself Stronger, is on Radio 4 at 7:45 p.m. And now for some programmes broadcast each weekday at the same time. Composer of the Week on Radio 3 brings you Icons of British Light Music, and you can find Composer of the Week on Radio 3 at 4 p.m. each afternoon. Ian Hislop's Oldest Jokes is on Radio 4 each afternoon, Monday to Thursday at 6:15 p.m. The Lebrecht Interviews, meeting major figures from the music world to discuss their life and career, on Radio 3 each day, except Wednesday, at 9:15 p.m. Book at Bedtime, A Long Winter by Colm Tóibín, is on Radio 4 each evening at 10:45 p.m. And the BBC Short Story Award 2025 can be heard each evening at 11:30 p.m. And then on Monday, the 29th of December, Whatever Happened to Progress? Matthew Sweet explores the crisis of progress in areas of technology, economic expansion, climate and the global political order. Whatever Happened to Progress is at 11 a.m. on Radio 4. And Vintage Comedy today is a 1975 episode of Dad's Army on Radio 4 Extra at 12:30 p.m. and again at 6:30 p.m. In today's edition of Great Lives, you can hear about Christine de Pizan, an Italian-born court writer in medieval France and one of the first female professional writers. Great Lives is on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. And BBC Proms 2025 on Radio 3 brings you a concert with music from Strauss, Bernstein and Ravel, recorded at the Royal Albert Hall in September. BBC Proms 2025 is on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. And then Tuesday, the 30th of December. In What is Quantum?, Marnie Chesterton visits the remote German island of Helgoland, where quantum theory was discovered a century ago. What is Quantum?, marking this anniversary, is on Radio 4 at 9:30 a.m. Vintage Comedy Today is a 1957 episode of The Goon Show, and that's on Radio 4 Extra at 12:30 p.m., repeated at 6:30 p.m. Almonds and Raisins, a drama based on the novel by Maisie Moscow, is on Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. What is the role of poetry in raising resilient, happy children? The Poetry Detective explores this topic on Radio 4 at 4 p.m. Today's BBC Proms 2025 brings you music from Ortiz, Tchaikovsky and Mussorgsky, recorded in August, and you can listen on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. And then Wednesday, the 31st of December, New Year's Eve. Vintage Comedy Today is a 1958 episode of Hancock's Half Hour, and that's on Radio 4 Extra at 12:30 p.m, repeated at 6:30 p.m. Pantomime, Radio 4 style, can be heard in Snow White's Radio Drama Romance at 2:15 p.m. on Radio 4. And choral evensong for New Year's Eve comes from St James's Church, Sussex Gardens in London, and that's on Radio 3 at 3 p.m. Classic FM has a programme of soft music to soothe your pets during fireworks. In Pet Classics on Classic FM from 6 p.m. to 1 a.m. on New Year's Day. BBC Proms 2025 on Radio 3 at 7 p.m. is another chance to hear The Last Night of the Proms 2025. Archive on 4, Marvel vs DC Comics, explores the decades-long rivalry between the two great publishing companies. Archive on 4 is on Radio 4 at 8 p.m. And then Thursday, the 1st of January, New Year's Day. The musical highlight of every New Year's Day is the live concert from Vienna. The New Year's Day concert is on Radio 3 at 9:30 a.m. In This Cultural Life, John Wilson is joined by comedian, actor and writer Ricky Gervais. This Cultural Life is on Radio 4 at 11 a.m. Vintage Comedy Today is Yes Minister from 1983, and that's on Radio 4 Extra at midday, repeated at 6 p.m. And the documentary Kibra Ballerinas, following young ballet dancers in the Kibera settlement in Nairobi, Kenya, as they prepare for their biggest performance to date. Choice Kibra Ballerinas is on BBC World Service at 9:30 a.m. and again at 8:05 p.m. And then Friday, the 2nd of January, Tony Blackburn, the veteran disc jockey, presents a special edition of one of his favourite genres. Tony Blackburn's Sounds of Soul is on Radio 2 at midday. Vintage Comedy Today is a 1971 edition of Steptoe and Son and is on Radio 4 Extra at 12:30 p.m, repeated at 6:30 p.m. In Dead Funny History, Greg Jenner explores the tragedy and triumph in the Bronte story. Dead Funny History is on Radio 4 at 2:45 p.m. Now, Friday night is Music Night, a dance-themed concert from 2024, is on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m.
TNS Soundings.
A quick round of thanks for this pre-Christmas edition. The readers this week were James, Alison, Lauren, Sargit,
Jenny and Kate. With thanks as always to Sue for picking the articles, the distribution team, including Tony at the Town Hall, and Pam, of course, helping to bring it all together in the background. A very happy and peaceful Christmas from me, Ray, and all the team. We won't be back with you until January the 17th, 2026. We all need a rest, I'm afraid. We've been putting so much work into the Christmas special, we certainly need a break. And, of course, that special will be up on the SVI website on our own page in the next day or two, and also as a podcast for those who listen that way. Do take care. Have a nice Christmas.
Our talk phone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message. Phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.